This podcast covers all things health, your body, your brain, and your well-being. Each week, we'll be joined by doctors, as well as the occasional guest, to talk about the health topics that mean the most to you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
So today we're going to talk about Alzheimer's and sleep, and more or less the basic concept of what we're going to talk about is does Alzheimer's cause sleep problems, or do sleep problems cause Alzheimer's? Kind of, we're going to have kind of a chicken or the egg type of a discussion here today. And I was just saying that Dr. Gates, depending on, someone asked this yesterday, asked me, do we treat a lot of Alzheimer's? And according to that one classification system that has like seven stages, so probably 90% of our patients would be classified as having some stage of Alzheimer's. We treat a lot of stress, and stress hormones tend to hit something called your hippocampus, and you're going to find out a little bit about the hippocampus today. And stress hits that hippocampus, and the hippocampus causes sleep problems. And so there are the cycles that hit the hippocampus of different things, and the hippocampus is where your short-term memory is, and it's where I think it's pretty agreed upon that Alzheimer's begins. So we see a lot of people with early, I forget, walking in the rooms. I can't find my keys. I don't remember where I put them. I lost my train of thought, and I'm starting to get short-term memory loss, my working memory, something like that, which may not be called full-blown Alzheimer's at that point in time, but by that classification system, you're on the way. So we see a lot of people with this.
And it doesn't mean that you're going to go there either. And so when we say 90% of our patients, we're not saying 90% have Alzheimer's.
Correct.
We're just saying, Dr. Rutherford was saying,
based on classification.
Exactly. You have to look at it. It's like if you have, exactly as you said, if you walk into a room and you don't know why you're there, you're like stage one.
Yeah. So, but the point is that area is something that we see a lot and work with a lot. Mm-hmm. And so Dr. Gates is going to talk about that regarding a much more higher classification of that, which would be someone who is inarguably maybe diagnosed with a higher stage of Alzheimer's. And so sleep and Alzheimer's has been connected, and we see it all the time in our students, in our patient population. And I know I have my thoughts on it, which I was discussing with Kevin before you got up here, but I think I'm interested in hearing your thoughts on it, because Dr. Gates does all treatment here now, and he gets to observe and have to use these concepts to wade his way through some of these challenging cases. So sleep, Alzheimer's.
And what was the article you read last week? Do you remember?
No, Alzheimer's. It was 2 weeks ago, so no, I don't remember, because I'm at stage two. I've also had many, many concussions, and there are certain things that have not come all the way back. And although my short-term memory is much better than it used to be, because of what we do is still, as you well know.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it pertained to Alzheimer's and sleep and something of the nature, I thought, pertaining to rapid eye movement behavioral disorder, something of that nature, like the abnormalities of sleep. So last night I dug in and I was looking at the research on it. And for those of you out there, rapid eye movement behavioral disorder is a disorder where most of you have heard of REM sleep. And when we're in REM sleep, we're actually basically, they term it atonic. So like you're kind of like paralyzed, and that helps your brain for whatever reason to get more restful. It's a more restful state. But in certain conditions like Parkinson's disease, multisystem atrophy, which is a type of Parkinsonism, or Lewy body dementia, individuals will go into REM sleep and then they'll start doing seemingly odd behaviors. Like they'll get up and they'll walk around and they may yell. And there was some thought that this was associated with Alzheimer's disease, but that association is not very strong, and they're thinking that those Alzheimer's patients who have it probably have Lewy body dementia, so that's one component of it. Now, also on the topic of sleep, there has been research, and I think this more pertains to the article that Dr. Rutherford read, where they showed if you are sleep deprived, it increases your accumulation of beta amyloid plaques in the brain quite significantly. So that probably was the study that was being talked about in the mainstream media. Mm-hmm. And beta amyloid plaques.
That was it.
Okay. Yeah. Beta amyloid plaques are the key protein aggregate, so to speak, that forms in the brain of Alzheimer's patients. And there can be genetic associations as to why that protein forms. Everything else that Dr. Rutherford was saying from blood sugar. Definitely blood sugar is probably the biggest factor that we're seeing. Stress hormones clearly damage the hippocampus. I was just looking on this Alzheimer's forum last night, and they were talking about, ooh, the memory area is connected to depression and anxiety, which we've been talking about for years.
Yeah.
But the physiology is such that, like in depression and anxiety, the fear center gets too big, and it actually grows into the memory area, and that propagates the physiology of depression through cortisol. Alzheimer's is different than that, but again, we're still involving the same ham sandwich of the fear center and the memory center being involved.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it feels like, so some of you out there will say they don't know what causes Alzheimer's because there's that out there, kind of like half of all peripheral neuropathy is diabetes, which is an incorrect statement. Well, maybe not entirely incorrect, but there's like 85 different causes of peripheral neuropathy. To me, it looks like there's physiology that damages the hippocampus. They're starting to call diabetes type 3. They're starting to call Alzheimer's diabetes type 3. Stress clearly has an affinity for the hippocampus. Short-term memory loss, can't go to sleep, wake up, can't go back to sleep. You know, so thyroid type Hashimoto's can cause sleep abnormalities, and I don't know if that inflammation has also maybe something to do with it.
But, not, I haven't seen that it has, but I'm not saying it won't in the future.
But there are physiological abnormalities that affect this hippocampus where it is acknowledged that the Alzheimer's starts. It seems to me like that starts. Then you get to sleep. Then the sleep thing goes back and causes and then it creates this vicious cycle. I don't know if that's it, but that's kind of the intuitive observation of clinically that I see in the patients that are being treated here in their histories and taking their histories and over a period of time. That may or may not be, but they're definitely linked as far as that goes. I would guess it's not, this is not a study, this is me. This is me observing a lot of different histories that we've taken over a period of time. It just seems like it starts with the blood sugar, the stress. They damage it. Next thing you know, you start getting sleep problems, and somewhere along the line, maybe you throw a couple of other things in there that we're not aware of yet that distinctly affect Alzheimer's or the creation of the damage that causes the diagnosis of Alzheimer's. And now you got Alzheimer's, and now between that and sleep, maybe you have this perpetuating situation where the amyloid plaques are connected and that type of a thing. So I would probably, if you're not sleeping well right now and you don't have Alzheimer's, I'd probably be more concerned about my blood sugar and my stress levels. And then later I'll worry about the sleep. But I could be wrong on that, but feels kind of like...
Yeah. And so many of these seemingly complicated diseases start with very, you know, seemingly simple issues like blood sugar, which relates to your diet, which relates to your basically your habits. But a lot of you think you're eating healthy and you don't know that you're not eating healthy, because the game has changed in terms of food and what's going on in industrialized societies. And then, you know, we're not sleeping. It's just all these simple things that seem to fall apart that then manifest 30, 40, 50 years later as a pretty significant disease process that's not correctable at this point in time by modern medicine. So
we thought that might be an interesting topic, given that it hit the airways a couple of weeks ago, Alzheimer's, since one of those things that is being researched a lot because they haven't found the cause yet. And so we thought we would kind of put our two cents in there based on what we've observed here. And I hope that might be an interesting bit of information for you today.
Yeah.
This is important. You want to know how to get better. Now, there's going to be some nuggets in here that are going to help some of you. There's going to be some of you who are like, you know, throwing spitballs at your screen going, wow, this guy's like an idiot. But I'm telling you, these are the basics of how to get better. And if you bypass these, plus the ones we're going to be talking about over the next week or two, you are going to have a hard time getting better at all. And if you get better, you're going to be the person who has to keep doing it over and over and over again, because there are things that are sabotaged. So wrap up this week's presentation, and I'm here to educate you. We're here to try to answer the questions that we've had over the last, you know, 6 or 7 years or 8 years or whatever it's been. And so please do that. So until next week. I hope you. If you're
enjoying this, then you know, please don't miss next week. Next week is kind of a big deal in most people's journey to wellness. So, okay, that's it for this week. Thank you for watching again, and take care.
This will conclude the episode. Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you hear, please leave a comment and subscribe. Thank you.